Good evening and welcome to Truth Radio, broadcasting on www.carersunited.org. The views expressed by our guests don't necessarily conform to the views of Truth Radio. Likewise, the views expressed on the websites Truth Radio is broadcast from do not necessarily reflect the views of our guests. My name is Chris Powis, and tonight I speak to homeopath Louise McLean. Welcome, Louise.
Welcome to you.
What first got you interested in homeopathy?
Well, I have two daughters, and the eldest daughter was a toddler, and she had basically had a sort of upset tummy. She was only 14 months, and it went off ages and ages. Went to the doctor, and he said, don't give her milk, and she loved milk. Anyway, so we stopped giving her milk, and then basically she got thinner and thinner, and so I just gave her milk again. And 6 months later, she had a really bad upset tummy, vomiting and diarrhea. Anyway, the thing is that at the time, I was friendly with a woman who was had her children at the Steiner School in Bristol, and they're very interested in homeopathy, the Steiner Schools, Rudolf Steiner. And she suggested giving her a homeopathic remedy, and I gave it to my daughter. It happened to be the remedy Arsenicum, and instantly it stopped. Just instantly after she took the remedy, and she never had that problem again. And I thought, oh my God, this is magic. This is a miracle, because don't forget she'd been sort of suffering from it for about 9 months.
How old was she at the time?
She was 14 months old.
So it couldn't have been psychosomatic, because she wouldn't have known at 14 months.
Exactly.
They also give it to animals with remarkable, they use homeopathy on animals, and animals don't know any different.
They don't. And my cat actually, she's 16 years old, and she was really not going to live very much longer. She was just lying there, and I thought she was going to die. And I basically gave her the remedy Carbo-Veg, which is a sort of death apparent, almost someone. Anyway, sort of hardly breathe, bloated abdomen. And my goodness, that was about 6 weeks ago, and she's been absolutely fine ever since. She's, as I say, she'll be 16 in August.
I believe homeopathic remedies are very cheap.
There's one remedy which is Lachesis, and I think they're still using the same original remedy that was first made about 150 years ago, because you can keep making more from the original tincture.
That's amazing.
Yes, actually there's 3,500 homeopathic remedies, and what people don't understand is that you could line up 20 people with asthma, and they might all need a different homeopathic medicine. This is why the clinical trials, the trials they do on homeopathy, it's very difficult to prove that it works, because you can't give the same remedy to 50 or 100 people. Homeopathy is individualized, so each person needs their own individual remedy, and therefore they're always saying that homeopathy doesn't work, or there are no proper studies and trials to show it works. Actually, there are quite a few, but it's not the ideal way to trial it. The best trial would be to have 50 people taking orthodox medicine and 50 people being treated with homeopathy that's been individualized for each one of them, and then compare the results.
You were just saying about how extensive it is in India. What about in other countries? Is there any other areas of the world where homeopathy is used quite extensively?
Yes, it's used extensively throughout Europe, and especially in France. so most countries, and it's very, very popular in Germany and also in South America. In fact, it's spreading throughout the world. America, once upon a time, had masses of homeopathic colleges, homeopathic dispensaries, and homeopathic hospitals. And it all died out in sort of around the 1920s when somebody called Abraham Flexner did reports which downgraded all the herbal and homeopathic colleges, and so they closed down. So that meant that no new homeopaths were being trained. And basically also with the advent of antibiotics. But then there has been recently a big revival in America and interest in homeopathy. So yeah, most countries in the world are now using it.
Well, I know for our listeners that want to look into not necessarily a history of homeopathy, but the history of, shall we say, would I be polite in saying alternative medicine, although I don't look at it as alternative, I look on the, shall we say, the pharmaceutical industry as alternative. And that would Eustace Mullins, Death by Injection, because he actually explains what happened in America to the medical industry. And
yes,
I would advise listeners to look that up on YouTube and find it very interesting.
Yes.
Now,
it's on the Homeopathy Heals website.
Is it?
Yes, I put it up.
Okay.
It's on the homepage.
Please remind me before we come to the end of this to ask you for your website, which I'm sure people. So I'll advise people in advance: get your pieces of paper and pencils ready now, because we're going to give Louise's website soon. Okay. Now, I've had quite a few emails in from people asking various questions. And one of them is from a lady who's in her 50s, and she has muscles that have just begun swelling up. But I hasten to add, she was advised, because she's become very much into not necessarily homeopathy, but herbalism and alternative medicine and that, to drink, I think it was 2 glassfuls of salted water per day. Now, she's a very short lady. She's only about 5 foot. So I'll just put that to you. Have you any advice for her?
Well, firstly, I would advise no one, absolutely no one, to use table salt from a supermarket. It's very dangerous. It's the anti-caking agent that's really bad for you. But I only use Himalayan crystal salt from bestcare.co.uk. But Himalayan crystal salt is totally safe for you. It's got 78 minerals. I don't think it's such a good idea for her to be drinking the salt water. It would be safe for her to have the Himalayan one. But definitely homeopathy could help her. And she needs to find a good homeopathic practitioner. Again, each remedy, each person is individualized. So I wouldn't be able to say which remedy she needs for her condition.
I heard, and it wasn't an old wives' tale, about bicarbonate of soda being used as a cold remedy. It said that if you've got a cold starting, I'm not a homeopath or anything like that, but I just read this off the internet, and I've used it, and it works, and that is, you put half a teaspoonful of bicarbonate of soda in a tumbler of lukewarm water, and take that every 2 hours the first day, every 4 hours the second day, and once in the morning, once in the evening on the third day. And I've actually done this whenever I've had a cold starting, and the cold has cleared up in a matter of hours. Do you know, I mean, I guess there's 1,001 things that people can do if they have a cold starting or anything like that.
Yes, it is very good for alkalining the blood, bicarbonate of soda. And basically, people very often get ill. Most illnesses can be traced to the fact that their blood becomes acidic and the pH is too low. And 7 is the ideal pH of blood. And you need to alkaline your blood, because most of the foods we eat nowadays are acid producing. There are very few foods that are alkaline producing, but bicarbonate soda once you alkaline your blood, and you will definitely really is very good and very important. And also, it's great cancer preventative as well.
Really?
A lot of people have been using it to actually get rid of cancer. And there's an Italian doctor who was publicizing this fact. Definitely, yes. Yeah, because cancer always goes together with acidic blood.
Really? That's interesting. That's very interesting. I'd like to clarify, if I may, for also the listeners, we covered sort of homeopathy, sort of the broad scale of it, but people get muddled up between herbalism, I did naturopaths, homeopathy. Am I right in saying with homeopathy it is diluting or making a tincture from something? Am I correct in that assumption?
Yes, but you see, the dilution alone would do nothing. And this is what the skeptics are always attacking us, talking about dilution. It's the dilution and succussion that combined, which potentizes the substance. So if you take something like, for example, chamomile, to start to make a homeopathic remedy, you would take the whole plant and submerge it in a jar with pure alcohol for 24 hours, and then basically all the sort of properties drawn out into the alcohol, and then you take one drop of that liquid and you mix it with 99 drops of alcohol water. Basically, so you have an alcohol water medium that you use to make remedies, and that's 40% alcohol, 60% distilled water. So you've got a big bottle of that, and then you've got your original chamomile liquid. So you take one drop of chamomile liquid, add 99 drops of the alcohol water mix, shake it 100 times, and that's a 1C. C stands for 100. Then you take one drop of the 1C, put it into another bottle, add 99 drops of the alcohol water mix, shake it 100 times, and that's 2C. Then you take one drop of the 2C, add another 99 drops of alcohol water mix, shake it 100 times, that's a 3C, and so on and so on, right up to 50,000 C. And what it does is somehow the succussion or shaking seems to bring out the formative intelligence of the substance and imprint it on the alcohol water mix. And the higher the potency, the more powerful it is. And for these skeptics, if they were to take a 10,000 dose remedy, you really feel the kick of it, you know, it's really powerful. The lower potencies are used for more sort of serious chronic illness of old or weak people. You always give low potencies. And the higher potencies are used more for sort of very energetic, say, sort of teenagers or strong people, you can use higher potencies. And also the higher potencies are used as well for mental, emotional conditions. For example, Ignatia is for extreme grief. Say someone's died or something like that, or they've broken up with their boyfriend, and they're slamming doors and leave me alone and crying their eyes out, and that's Ignatia. And you really wouldn't give a low potency Ignatia. You would always give it in a 1,000 or something like that. But for chronic illnesses where there's organ and tissue changes, you stick to low potencies, or you could cause aggravations. But mental, emotional problems, there are loads of remedies for depression, grief, anxiety, people who are sort of mentally unbalanced, and or terror. It's fantastic.
I know what you mean, yes.
It's absolutely fantastic homeopathy.
I guess you'd have to see the individual before you could actually prescribe anything. Am I right in saying that?
You'd have to write down all the symptoms. And also you observe their behavior as well, because people often don't really know what they're like. You have to obviously hear what they say. You write everything down, and then you work out which remedy it is. But basically, how it works is this, okay? Hippocrates said there were two laws of healing, the law of similars and the law of opposites. Orthodox medicine uses opposites. So what they do is, with illnesses, they suppress them. They give something to stop the illness. But with homeopathy, we give something, we give like for like. So, for for example, here's a case, right? A woman that I saw recently, she had a red rash that started in the nape of her neck, spread round her neck, and right round to her face, with her eyes swelling up, red, hot, itchy rash, and sort of almost burning, and she didn't know where it had come from. Now, the remedy was Rustox, which is poison ivy, because given a potentized, a highly potentized dose, which that there are no more molecules after you go past a 12C, there are no more actual physical molecules, but the formative intelligence of the substance is imprinted on the alcohol water mix up as you go up the potencies. And you give it, so basically, she was given Rustox, this poison, because you give a tiny bit of something that would cause the symptoms that the person has if you were to give it in a material dose. So if you were to actually eat poison ivy, you would, or touch it, you come up with this red rash, itchy rash, and, which would almost become inflamed and start oozing fluid when it becomes swelling. The rash starts to swell as well, and oozing, as I say. Mm. And basically, that's what would happen if you were to either swallow or touch poison ivy. So in a homeopathic remedy, or what it does is the person's ill and they're stuck with this illness. So you give them the remedy, and all it does is it kick-starts the person's own healing power. It just nudges through like for like the body to start healing itself.
That makes sense. One thing I'd like to add, Louise, is that now, this is off the top of my head, so if anybody starts phoning in and saying, you're wrong, but I did hear that I think it's the equivalent of a jumbo jet full of people every day in America are killed by wrong diagnosis by doctors.
And the side effects of medicine.
That's right.
The hospitals are full of people who are just suffering side effects of medicine. You know, what very often happens is somebody's given a medicine, and then within 3 weeks, they suffer, but you're quite right, it's some enormous figure. Millions of people a year are dying from side effects of medicine.
I did hear some statistic where more people die in a week than the whole of the Vietnam War through wrong diagnosis, but I've never known anybody to actually die from homeopathy.
Yes, unless they were so ill they were going to die anyway and it was too late.
I mean, some people would say, well, I can't see this dilution. Now, you've explained that very well. It's excellent. But
It kick-starts the body's own thing.
That's logical, because am I right in saying that there was a lot of experiments, I think, by a Frenchman
Jacques Bonveniste.
Looking at water, and believe it, water had a memory.
Yeah, the memory of water.
Mm.
And he was hounded out of his job at Inserm.
That's right.
In France. In fact, he was just about to start doing his experiments again. First, he was published in Nature, actually.
Well, but my feeling is if homeopathy was no threat to mainstream medicine, they wouldn't take the mickey out of it. They'd just let it get on its own, wouldn't they?
Exactly.
When you look at it logically, anything they take the mickey out of must be a threat to them. To me, what you're saying is logical. I believe the royal family actually use homeopathy, don't they?
Apparently, the Queen won't travel anywhere without her box of homeopathic medicines.
Well.
It was actually in a Daily Mail article about a year or so ago.
I think Fergie uses... Now, I'm not sure he's a homeopath, but I did see a documentary a long time ago where she visited this man who's... he must have been in his late 80s, early 90s then.
Oh, Jack Temple.
Possibly, I don't know.
It was Jack Temple. He died, actually. He was quite old. Oh. But I think Diana might have gone to him as well. But I think he did use homeopathy, actually, Jack Temple, yeah.
Because it can't really, see, this is the thing, it can't kill you, and
there's no chemicals, actual chemical substance, because it's been potentized so much, there's no molecules of chemicals in it.
What proves it for me, though, is when they use it on animals, because animals don't know any difference, as I said earlier.
And babies.
That does prove it.
I'd like to bring in my beautiful red roses as well, where I spoke to this wonderful man called Caveridge, agro-homeopathy, which is for gardens and farms, and basically I said, oh, I've got this black spot on my roses, and, you know...
So have I.
Green fly.
So have I.
Well, I'll tell you what he said. He said, just give it Belladonna 6. So I this was last year, and I put the Belladonna 6, I crunched it up with some water, and I put it on the roots, and all the black spot went, those leaves dropped off, and beautiful new leaves came, and all the green fly, they all...
Let's make a note of this. Was it Belladonna...
Belladonna 6. I've just given it some more today because I saw a tiny bit of comeback.
So, don't ask me, where did you get Belladonna 6 from?
You get it from Boots. Boots sell really? Belladonna 6. And in fact, the skeptic's been railing against Boots and Holland and Barrett for selling homeopathic medicines.
Really? Do you just put this into ordinary water or your own water?
Just a little bit of... put one pill into an egg cup with a little bit of warm water, not hot, because that will kill off the remedy. And then you crunch it with the back of a spoon, and then and actually then you can throw the rest of the little crunchy bits of the pill away, because you don't need them. It's got... the remedy's gone into the water then, having crunched it up, right? And then just put a few teaspoons of the water, which has got the remedy in, on the roots. And you'll see, it's just... I mean, these are like amazing roses from the 70s that my mother had, and I bought them.
I'm the same, yeah.
And I really want them. And my God, I had 8 beautiful... They're in a pot, so, you know, they're not very free, but, you know, to sort of climb or do anything. But I had 8 beautiful roses and exquisite smell. Mm.
Well, the miniature roses, really, miniature roses are getting it the worst. They've got black spot, green fly, you name it, they've got it. And the leaves are all going yellow and falling off. Terrible.
He's written a fantastic book about exactly what remedies to give every different plant and every different tree. And, I mean, it worked. It really is great.
Well, I can tell you something here that changes the subject very slightly. A friend of mine, I won't mention who, he had a very bad chest. And I speak to him on a regular basis. And often he would come on the phone and he'd be... You think, my word, he sounds in a bad way. Yeah. And you gave him a remedy. And I got on the phone, and I didn't know you'd given him a remedy. And this is how actually I found you, because via him. And I said, hello, is that... I won't mention his name. Yes. Is that you? He sounded about 30 years younger. And there was that sort of, oh, hello, Chris. And I thought, hey, what?
Yeah, I gave him one remedy, yeah. And just one pill. That's the thing with homeopathy. See, it's the other thing. You don't have to take lots of pills. This is why it's so cheap. The pills wouldn't even cost 1p each. There'd be less than 1p each. And basically, you give... It's completely different. You have to forget everything about orthodox medicine. Because you give one high potency. It's like I've given to this lady as well with all the... anyway, one sort of potency, one pill... And then you leave it to work. And if it's a 200 or a 1,000, which is called 1M, some remedies can work for, well, not just months and months. Some can work for a year. Especially in children, it's amazing how well they grow and how their intelligence improves, everything. And their ability to be happy and everything. But you give one stimulus. You don't see, one remedy is a stimulus to the body. So you don't want to overstimulate. You can't just keep giving lots and lots. The exception is when people are very old and weak or have very serious chronic illness, you can't give high potencies. You give low potencies, which they can take once or twice a day, like the 6C, which is what you get in Boots and Holland and Barrett, sort of 6 and 30C. Those are the lower potencies. There's molecules below a 24X, and below a 12C, the original molecule is present. So, but some remedies are very... All the calcium remedies, are very deep-acting and long-acting, and a whole bunch of other ones. And then there's ones like, for example, the Ignatia one I mentioned, which is shorter-acting, but it, you know, get rid of the problem.
If a person came along to homeopath... Now, unfortunately, today's climate, everything is... money orientated, and I do hope you don't think this is a rude question, but if they went, not necessarily to yourself, but say to a homeopath, How much could they expect to pay for a sort of a consultation? Is it particularly expensive?
Well, it is rather expensive nowadays, I've noticed. And I've seen people, the first consultation where a lot of detail has to be carefully recorded. Some homeopaths are charging up to £80. The lowest price I've seen is about 50, but it can take an hour and a half, 2 hours. And that's the most difficult one, because after you've found the remedy, the first remedy, any other remedies are likely to be related ones. Or they'll have maybe they come back in 2 months and have another dose of the same remedy. So the difficult bit is the first consultation. After that, it's cheaper. It can drop down to about 40 even for the second one.
How many? I mean, this is a $64,000 question. I don't blame you for not asking me, but I suppose you can guess what my question is going to be. How many roughly sort of consultations would a person need to have? And again, this is a difficult question.
It's not a difficult question at all. It depends how ill they are. If they're seriously ill and maybe they've had arthritis for 20 years, they're not going to get better overnight. They say a rough guide is a month for a year. So that person might take 20 months to get completely clear of the arthritis. A month for a year with homeopathy to reverse the illness. But if they, you know, if it could be something quite straightforward. And that might just be one consultation.
Also, with things to do with stress and nerves and things, there's a lot of environmental problems, like, for instance, sick building syndrome and things like that, that I guess can actually come into creating a problem.
Yes, that's an ongoing problem if you're working in one of those kind of buildings. But if you strengthen up, you see, if the body is strengthened up sufficiently, it can sort of ward off, and it won't be affected. But it's if a person's a bit weak and a bit run down, they're more likely to be affected by anything.
Well, it's like wasps. They would, my father used to say, they only seem to sting you if you're run down. They kind of sense it. It's something they can sense. And I believe cats only sit on negative areas. Some animals are very instinctive about things.
Yeah, there's homeopathic medicines for everything and anything. I mean, here's an example. At one point, my mother had adhesions, you know, which is scar tissue from old operations. You can get scar tissue. And basically, it was somehow was blocking her digestive system. And there's a little tiny remedy made from mustard oil called thiocyamine. And I gave her that, and the whole thing was fixed up. It dissolved scar tissue. There's remedies for... I broke my ankle and I never went to a doctor, never had an x-ray, I didn't do anything, just took the remedy Symphytum, which is the herb comfrey, which is also called bone knit, turned into a homeopathic remedy, Symphytum, and it just quickly knits the bone together. And in fact, one time I actually broke a tendon on the other ankle, and that took a bit longer, but it did exactly the same thing, it knitted it together. And now both my ankles are stronger than they've ever been. But there's so many homeopathic medicines for everything and anything.
Is there different branches of homeopathy? Because...
A little bit. Sometimes there's what's known as polypharmacy, where, you know, they'll say, take this remedy for, or they might be taking three remedies at the same time. But then there's classical homeopathy, which always believes in giving one remedy at a time, and certainly, you know, they don't like sort of mixing them. But occasionally it's necessary, people in a very bad state. I've heard fantastic cures when they've given about three different remedies, not always all at once, but fairly close together, you know.
I can understand that, because it seems to me, and please excuse me if I sound a little ignorant what I'm saying, it seems very closely linked to herbalism. Would I be right in saying
that? Well,
yeah.
Well, a lot of homeopathic remedies are made from herbs. Just as I said, comfrey, the herb comfrey, is made into in the usual way that I described earlier. But what happens, as I was saying, about how they make the remedy right, each, like the 1C and the 2C and the 3C, are liquid tinctures, and what they do is they drop a little drop on a whole bottle of plain lactose tablets, so that the liquid tincture is infused into all the tablets, and then people take the tablet, which is infused with the tincture.
I've got you.
And it's on an energetic level almost, really.
I can't remember. I see what you mean. Now, lactose, isn't lactose, is that purely natural?
That's lactose is milk sugar, basically, like fructose
is fruit sugar. Yes, stupid me. I was thinking of a laxative.
Milk sugar. So you buy.
sorry about that.
You want to make your own remedies? You'd buy a packet of just the plain lactose tablets, put them in a bottle that you bought, like a whole bunch of bottles, and you put the pills in, then you take the liquid tincture of whatever the potency, maybe it's sulfur 30 or it's, as I say, Ignatia or one of them, and you drop it, a couple of drops into the bottle of these plain pills, lactose pills, and then you shake it up, and then now you've got a whole bottle of, you know, of a remedy. So you can see how cheap it is to make.
It's very cheap. The way I'm looking at it is that for the average person, I think there's probably two levels. If you are very ill, yes, go along and see a homeopath. But for something mild, I don't know, you twisted your ankle or something or whatever,
I guess you arnica.
And you can make up little, you know, things for yourself. And
yes,
again, I know I keep rubbing this in. They're not dangerous, are they?
No, but as long as you don't keep taking a remedy, if you take too much of it, it can work the other way, because I haven't mentioned something called provings. Hahnemann did this, and it still continues to this day, and it's very I think it's scientific, and that is that there might be a new remedy. Say it's willow tree or something, right?
Yes.
Okay? So they make up the willow tree remedy in the usual way, up to a 30C, and then they get 100 people to go away and keep taking the 30C willow tree remedy because they want to find out what it will cure, right? Mm-hmm. And you'll say, well, that's very odd. Okay, I'll explain why. So those 100 people are taking it, and they must record every symptom they experience, symptoms they've never had before in their lives very often, right? Maybe they wake up at 3 in the morning with a splitting headache, or they have a pain that runs down their left thigh, and they get a sudden craving to eat bananas, or and it's all these things that sort of go with remedies. Anyway, they all 100 people must secretly not talk to each other at all, but record diligently every symptom they experience. Then all of those symptoms go into a database. Whatever they all experience become the bold type symptoms of that remedy. Whatever, like 70% or 75% experience would be italic symptoms of that remedy, and whatever a few experience, maybe about 30% or whatever, would be plain type symptoms, right? And that all goes into the homeopathic repertory. So then you get somebody who has those symptoms, and you prescribe them. You know, a patient comes along with the symptoms that those people have experienced during the proving, and that person's given that remedy to cure them. And so, in this way, all remedies undergo provings to bring out their curative symptoms, what can be used to cure patients. So it's much better than pharmaceutical trials, which they always go on about, but are so fixed. They throw out all the, you know, the fact that maybe people had fits or, you know, convulsions or, for example, you know, they might be trialing a new antidepressant, but they don't want anyone who suffers from depression to come on the trial. Awful things will happen, but they throw all the bad data out. Anything that would make the drug look bad, they get rid of that. And
everything is talked up nowadays. I mean, you go through the entire political system, it's all talked up. You know, things are falling to bits, but don't worry. I mean, if, shall we say, the government was responsible for the weather forecast, it'd be bright and sunny every day, wouldn't it? Or if it isn't, it'll be tomorrow. Don't worry, the sun will come out tomorrow, but we've got to go through the hardship of bad weather today, but it'll be tomorrow. which will never come. But
I was going to say we're not getting on the subject of weather.
That's right.
That's another completely different one.
Total one. I'm not sure whether we mentioned it, but you can correct me if we have. I believe it's Homeopath Awareness Week this week, isn't it?
Yes, it is Homeopathy Awareness Week. Homeopathy Awareness Week, and that's a very good time to be doing this interview, and hopefully it finishes actually on Friday the 21st, and it would be great if we can get
21st this. Of June. Is that every year at the same time?
Every year, yeah, from the 14th to the 21st.
I was just thinking, if it was Homeopath Awareness Week, I mean, would you go along and say, oh, look, hello, then you're a homeopath, you know? I'm really joking.
Well, I'm hoping that all over Britain, homeopaths are going and standing in health food shops and talking about homeopathy to potential customers.
I'm interested that you mentioned health food shops, because I've noticed in the last 10 years or so, once upon a time, you could go down the road and you'd have an array of health food shops.
They're all closing down.
Took the words out of my mouth. And all you can get now is Holland & Barrett,
yes,
and those ones that are run by Tesco's. Name escapes me. And I have
Beauty
seen,
Centre.
Yes.
Center.
And I haven't seen, you very, very rarely see
independent
health
shops.
Yeah.
There is a very nice one called, what's it called? Revital. And they've got quite a few branches. But the thing is, what's happened, this is all to do with the EU, they have clamped down on so many products that...
Codex Alimentarius.
That's the worldwide thing, the Codex. This is the EU Food Supplements Directive.
Oh, no.
That has an approved list, basically, and loads of things are not on the approved list, so loads and loads of products have disappeared, and others have had to be reformulated, so they're not half as good as they were. And it's horrendous, the amount of products that have disappeared since the 90s, since we basically signed the Maastricht Treaty, which gave over our public health to the European Union. And we've had also, you know, there's a traditional herbal directive, that's clamping down on herbs. I mean, it's so ridiculous. I mean, you're just driving on the motorway and you can see herbs growing wild everywhere. But, of course, schools don't teach anymore about herbs and plants and other than in biology.
Well, this would probably be for a future radio program, but I was going to, today, go into what the NHS was really about, but that is such a huge issue because I've actually researched into it. And it was set up not for the reasons that people were told. And I believe that well-meaning politicians were duped as well.
Yes.
But we won't go there because it will take so long.
One thing, and that is it's a blank check for Big Pharma. I will say that. Can I just say something? And that is that there were loads of homeopathic hospitals here in Britain, and also 107 homeopathic dispensaries, like pharmacies, were here in Britain. And all of those now, there's only one last homeopathic hospital, because there was the London Homeopathic Hospital is now called something completely different and has acupuncture and I mean, basically, there's hardly any space for homeopathy now left there. And it's not a homeopathy hospital anymore. The Bristol Homeopathic Hospital, a lot of these homeopathic hospitals were built with money by very kind benefactors who believed in homeopathy. And they've all were taken over by the NHS, and basically, which fund them. And the Bristol one is now a kind of outpatient clinic in the South Bristol Community Hospital. And also, what was the other one now? The Liverpool one closed down as well. It's only the Glasgow Homeopathic Hospital that's left. And I have created a petition which has nearly 11,000 signatures demanding that we keep this one open. It's a template for how a hospital should be. apparently, you know, people who have stayed there just think it's the most wonderful place ever. I mean, I don't particularly, I'm not very keen on the NHS in any shape or form, but if I had to go to a hospital, that would be the one I would choose, if I could, to go to the Glasgow Homeopathic Hospital. And we've had assurances that it's not going to close, but there's been a slow creep over the last few years, and probably longer, to close down NHS homeopathy. Now, that also includes 500 medically qualified doctors in the UK who practice homeopathy, who are basically homeopathic doctors. And 500 is quite a lot.
It is. Well, I mean, they want to privatise everything. They're deliberately eroding the NHS.
Yes, they're trying to privatise it.
Yes, it's all privatised. It's all part of this communitarian lunacy. But with, for a fact, I was speaking to a nurse. She was in her 60s or 70s. And retired, and in the early 70s, I think it's 1972, she went on a Goodwill, she was Canadian, I believe, and she went on a Goodwill visit to China. And at that time, Chinese doors were closed, and very few Westerners went there. And she said that the hospitals, they grew herbs, and had windows that are open, so that when the wind blew, when you walked into a ward, you got this beautiful smell of herbs, and everything was to make you feel good. So you
had like Glasgow Homeopathic Hospital.
Because the way I look on hospitals is, to me, they're like meat factories.
Oh,
you know, meat in, meat out.
You take your life in your hands if you go in there. You're totally vulnerable. And,
Well, I saw what happened to my parents, and, I won't go into that. It's too upsetting. But I think that... It, to me, modern medicine really is nothing more than a religion that people worship. And people are brainwashed into believing certain things.
It's not even scientific, and all this nonsense about, you know, this kind of scientific dictatorship that we're under. It's not, I don't think it's scientific.
No, well, vaccines are not, are they? I mean, let's face it, there's been very few tests on them.
I know, exactly. But, you know, I mean, the provings of homeopathic medicines are far more scientific than the clinical trials of modern medicine, which are usually fixed, and then they usually get, I mean, and all the promotional stuff is written by the drug companies, and then very often they get some sort of famous professor to sort of put his name for a fee, to sign his name, you know. I don't think we should go into that one.
Yeah, we won't go there, but... We may on another day. Now, I must add, because there's people listening in with pencils and paper readily at hand, thinking when they're going to mention Louise's website. So we better say, where can they find out how to contact you and what sort of area you're located in? So if somebody wants to come along for a consultation.
Well, it's in London, and the website, if you contact me, you'll see my photo actually on the website, and you just click the photo and then read about me, and then there's a contact form. And the website is www.homeopathyheals.me.uk. So the website's Homeopathy Heals Me.
So it's www.
And then
Homeopathy Heals Me.
No, Heals.
Heals, terribly sorry. Heals.
Homeopathy Heals.
.me.uk. Okay, I need something for memory, don't I? Well, Louise, thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you very much, Chris.
Can I ask you a little favour? Can you come on air again? Because I think we're going to get quite a response to this.
Great.
Thank you very much, Louise.
Thank you, Chris.